Okay, hi, I'm Maureen O'Hagan with MCO Housing Services. This is the third and final lottery for the last 10 units at Highland at Vail in Wakefield. Tonight we're going to talk about the updated pricing, the lottery eligibility criteria, how the lottery is going to work, and how we're going to review applications and the documentation you need to provide with your application. I have opened the chat. So you certainly can ask me questions. If you want to ask me questions that are, not through chat, but ask me directly. This meeting is being recorded, so if you do want to ask a question, I can turn off the recording while I answer and then turn it back on. Did anyone hear that beginning part, or was my volume off?
It was on,
thank you. So if you want to ask me a question, I can turn off the recording and turn it back on when you're finished, but you need to request that. So I'm going to jump right in. And again, thank you. There's a lot of people here, so thank you for sharing your evening with me. So Highland at Vail is a new 197-unit development of condominiums and townhomes. One and two bedroom condominiums and three bedroom townhomes. In this lottery, there are 7 one bedroom units, 2 2 bedroom units, and 1 3 bedroom unit. So all the other three bedroom units have been sold and occupied. So, each unit, comes with a full kitchen appliance package, refrigerator, stove, oven, dishwasher, and microwave, and laundry hookup, so you're responsible to purchase your own washer and dryer. Pets are allowed per the policy, and my guess is any pet is fine, but there will be breed restrictions based on for insurance purposes. And again, this is the third and final lottery. So the one bedrooms are priced at $265.6 with $185 a month condo fee. These condo fees are not fixed. They will change on an annual basis as they redo the budget, and usually the budget is in place for January 1st, so you would be notified of any changes to your budget before the 1st of the year. The two-bedroom units are $299,300 with a $204 condo fee, and the three-bedrooms are $336,100 with $198 condo fee. And again, there's 1 3-bedroom, 2 2-bedrooms, and 7 one-bedroom condos. The 2025 tax rate is $8.54. You typically pay tax on the same tax rate as everybody, but you're paying taxes on the affordable price, not the appraised value of the unit. These units will be sold by lottery. Now, for those of you who have applied for previous lotteries, we've changed the process this time, meaning you need to provide your mortgage pre-approval and all the required financial documentation. We are only going to be looking at your mortgage pre-approval to determine your eligibility to be included in the lottery. If your pre-approval is not provided, or if it doesn't meet the mortgage guidelines that are stated on page 5, and that includes the mortgage specifics, you will not be included in the lottery, and you will be notified by email. Post-lottery is when we will review your financial documentation for eligibility. At that point, if we review and you are missing some financial documentation, we will notify you via email or letter if you don't have an email address of the missing documentation. You will have the opportunity to provide it if you choose, and you will be added to the waiting list. You will not be moving forward with the opportunity to purchase a unit. If you submitted a complete application, all the required financial documentation, we will review that documentation based on your household size, your lottery ranking, and the lottery pool, and then you will be offered a unit if you are determined eligible. If you are determined eligible based on, meaning you've submitted all your required financial documentation, we have reviewed you for eligibility, and you have been determined ineligible based on the program guidelines, which means income, assets, first-time home buyer status, you will have the opportunity to appeal our decision. And while that appeal process is moving forward, we would hold the unit for you until the appeal process has been resolved. But it can be confusing for everybody because we have changed the way we do things for each lottery, mainly because of the volume of applications we receive for this lottery. Last time we just got the commitment, and there were so many people who applied that were over income, over asset, and it took too much time to disqualify them. So we're doing it a little differently this time, and hopefully it will streamline the process on our end. Now, this meeting tonight is being recorded. It will be posted on our website tomorrow or Thursday. So if you want to listen to it again, you're more than welcome to. All right. Tonight's the meeting. April 15th is the application deadline, and the lottery is currently scheduled for Friday, May 2nd. If we can move that up, we will. But right now it's scheduled for May 2nd at 3:00. That will also be conducted via Zoom. Now, the eligibility criteria is based on income. One of the eligibility criteria is based on income. Income is adjusted for household size. So if you have a three-person household, you know, two adults and a child, it's a three-person household. Two adults and no children, you're a two-person household. And that's how we determine your income eligibility. Your income is based on gross income from all sources before any deductions. So it's before taxes are deducted from your income, but your gross income. So the maximum allowable income limit for a one-person household is $91,200. For a two-person household, $104,200. For a three-person household, $117,250. Four-person household, $130,250. Five-person, $140,700. And a six-person household, $151,100. So that is the gross maximum income that a household can earn. Now, income from all household members 18 years of age or older is counted towards eligibility. And I understand an 18-year-old is probably not going to be on the mortgage. That's okay. But they are considered an adult, and so their income and assets and homebuyer status, which I'm sure they never owned a home before, will be counted in determining program eligibility. You must be a first-time homebuyer. A first-time homebuyer is defined as someone who has not owned a home for a period of 3 years, and that includes homes that are in a trust. There are exceptions to the first-time homebuyer rule, which I'm going to read directly from the application. Excuse me. One is you're a displaced homemaker, which is defined as an adult who has not worked full-time, full year, for a number of years, and during those years worked primarily without pay to care for the home and family. And while a homemaker, you owned a home with his or her partner or resided in a home owned by the partner. If you're no longer with that partner, you would be considered a first-time home buyer again. You're a single parent where you owned a home with your partner, you reside in the home and are no longer there, and you are a single parent, whether you're married or legally separated from a spouse, has one or more children of whom the individual has custody, joint custody, or if you are pregnant. That would be an exception to the first-time home buyer rule. Households where at least one household member is 55 years of age or older, you do not need to be a first-time homebuyer. Households that owned a principal residence not permanently affixed to a permanent foundation in accordance with applicable regulations, that's usually considered a mobile home, you would be considered a first-time homebuyer. And then if you owned a property that wasn't in compliance with state, local, model building codes and cannot be brought into compliance for less than the cost of construction for a permanent structure, you would also be considered a first-time home buyer. If you owned a home, currently own a home, and you meet one of the exceptions above, that home must be sold prior to closing on an affordable unit. Does not have to be closed before you apply, but it has to be closed before you can close on the affordable unit. If you have a home to buy, you'll have a defined time frame to get that home under a purchase and sale agreement. And if it is not under a purchase and sale agreement within that defined time frame, then we will move on to the next applicant. That time frame will be determined by the developer. It's usually 30 days. I have not had that conversation with them because we've never had anybody that had a home to sell. Typically, it's 30 days to get your home under a P&S. And if you're unable to do that, then we would move on to the next buyer on the list. All right. And then the asset limit is $75,000. The assets are your checking, savings, stocks, bonds, money market, CDs. We may include your retirement, and I'll get into that in a moment. But we're going to add up all your assets. If they total $75,000 or more, you would be determined ineligible. If you're under $75,000, we will move forward with your processing your application if you have the opportunity to purchase. Now, regarding retirement accounts, if you have a 401k, 403b, you may or may not have access to those funds while you are employed for that company. If you can take an in-service withdrawal from a 401k or 403b, the total amount you can withdraw as an in-service withdrawal, and an in-service withdrawal of funds you do not need to pay back, so it's not a loan, then the value you can withdraw is counted towards your asset limit. We will deduct taxes, both state and federal, and if you're underage, we will also deduct usually a 10% penalty for early withdrawal. So we will deduct that amount, and then what's left will count towards the asset limit. If you can only take a loan out on your 401k and you do not have an option to withdraw without paying back, we're not going to count that 401k towards your asset limit at all. If you can take a home hardship withdrawal, and again, you don't need to pay that back, a hardship withdrawal, typically you're allowed to take after you've exhausted all your other assets, meaning you have no other money, that hardship withdrawal will be counted towards that asset limit. Again, less taxes and penalties if they apply. If you have no access to your funds at all, we will not count them. However, if you are of age where you, even though you're still working, you can withdraw funds from your 401k, they will count. Okay? And if you are no longer working for, excuse me, a hiccup. If you are no longer working for a company that you have a 401k, had a 401k, and you have not rolled that over into an IRA or some other kind of plan, then that 401k will count in its entirety, less taxes and penalties if they apply. All right. If you work for the state, if you work for a town, we know you don't have access to those funds while you were still employed. That hasn't changed in many years. You still need to provide documentation from those accounts. If you are over $75,000 and you can take an in-service withdrawal, or, you know, if you're over the $75,000 asset limit because of your retirement accounts or pension accounts, you need to provide documentation from the company who is managing your 401k or 403b, and you have a handbook, and it will describe the circumstances you can withdraw from that account, all right? So this is not in the application. So if it applies to you, if it's not included, you will not be disqualified, but we will be asking for that documentation before we finalize the review of your application. All right, any questions on anything so far? Nope, okay. And if you divested of any assets for less than fair market value within the past 2 years, they will be counted at full market value when we determine your asset limits. Okay, so this is an affordable unit. It must be your principal residence. You cannot rent or lease the unit unless you have monitoring agent approval. The monitoring agent for this project is the Executive Office of Housing and Livable Communities, EOHLC for short. It used to be DHCD. They changed their name. They are your monitoring agent. So if you're in a situation where you need to rent or lease your unit, that's who you need to ask permission from. It's rarely provided because the purpose of the program, is not for you to rent your unit or lease your unit. It's to live in it full time. But you certainly can ask. A non-household member is not permitted to be a co-signer on the mortgage, so you need to be able to show us that you're able to get the loan without a co-signer. And finally, a mortgage pre-approval letter is required to participate, and there are specific mortgage guidelines, which we're going to go over next. and I will get to the questions. One, your mortgage must be a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. If you submit an adjustable rate mortgage, you're automatically out. So it must be a fixed rate mortgage. The loan must have a current fair market interest rate. Some of the pre-approvals won't put an interest rate on it because they lock it in at the time you have the opportunity to purchase. So I understand that if your pre-approval doesn't come through with an interest rate, I'm not going to deduct it for you. But understand, if you have the opportunity to purchase, your mortgage commitment will be sent to the monitoring agent. They will review it to meet these guidelines. And if they do not meet these guidelines, you're not going to be able to purchase, and you're going to find that out 2 weeks before you close. So this page, which is page 5 of the application, it would be to your benefit to provide this to your mortgage lender so they have this on file if you have the opportunity to purchase. We did have one buyer in one of the lotteries for Woburn who came through with a 9% interest rate. And, of course, that was denied. That stuff is looked at very closely. So make sure your loan must have a current fair market interest rate and it is no more than 2% above the current mass housing rate. You must provide a down payment of 3%. That is the minimum down payment. If you are using a down payment assistance program, Mass Housing has one, Federal Home Loan Bank has one, or you're getting a gift from family members, then you only need to provide 1.5% of your 1.5% down payment of your own funds. So when we review your application for eligibility, we're going to look for that, see if you make sure you have the 1.5%. If you don't have it, we're going to move to the next buyer, okay? But just keep in mind, if you're using a down payment assistance program, then you only need to provide 1.5% of your own funds. If you are not using one of those programs and you're not getting gift money from anybody, you are required to provide 3% down payment. The loan can have no more than 2 points, and the sales price of the unit, there's a formula that we use to set the sale price. You cannot pay more than 30% of your, the buyer may not pay more than 38% of their monthly income for housing costs, okay? So make sure your bank is aware of that. I think what I've understood, there's a little leeway in that through Mass Housing or the One Mortgage Program, but if you're paying 50% of your income for a mortgage, it is not going to be approved, okay? So keep these guidelines in mind. Again, non-household members are not permitted to be co-signers on the mortgage. FHA loans are not accepted as the program will not close on deed-restricted property. FHA, Rocket Mortgage, Quicken Loans, they will not close on deed-restricted properties. We're getting lately a lot of pre-approvals from mortgage lenders outside the state of Massachusetts. They are not going to close on a deed-restricted property in Massachusetts. They have no idea what that program is. So I would be cautioning you to only use a Massachusetts-based lender. You can go to any lender you want. That's fine, but I'm just cautioning you, do not go out of state. There are loan programs geared specifically for first-time home buyers. One is through the Massachusetts Housing Partnership, or MHP for short. That is the One Mortgage Program or the One Plus Mortgage Program. That program highlights only are you paying below market rates. Interest rate. You must have a minimum credit score of 660. You do not pay PMI, which is private mortgage insurance. And there's one more thing. What is it? Below market interest rate. 3% down payment. Yeah, 3%. Below market interest rate, 3% down payment, and you don't pay PMI. So it's a great program to work with. The other program and the One Plus or One Mortgage program is available only through approved lenders. You can find the approved lenders at mhp.net. You need to do a little navigation, but you'll be able to find all the approved lenders in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We also have 4 lenders on our website. They are all One Mortgage approved, and they are all Mass Housing approved, which is the other loan program I would recommend you look at. Mass Housing does have a down payment assistance program. which is really good. You tend to pay a higher interest rate for mass housing, so you need to look at that pretty carefully. Compare the programs, compare any program you get. I would caution you, if you're shopping around for a lender, that's fine. Do not let every lender pull your credit, because it can bring your credit score down. It takes nothing to bring it down. It takes a whole lot of work to bring it back up. So look, shop around if you want, but do not let every lender pull your credit, because it may it may not be to your advantage to do that. Okay, I have put together personally myself other additional mortgage specifics that your pre-approval must cover, because it's been problematic in the past. So I put this together to assist buyers to make sure they have the full information on the pre-approval, so when you submit it, it is accurate. So, number one, the mortgage pre-approval must cover the purchase price of the unit. So, for example, the three-bedroom home is priced at $336. If your pre-approval comes through for a home priced at $330, you're not moving forward in the process. The price of the home is $336.1. That is the purchase price that must be on your pre-approval to qualify for a three-bedroom. If it's below that, we may put you in the lottery for a two-bedroom unit, okay? So keep that in mind. If you are applying for more than one unit size or income limit AMI, doesn't apply here, then the approval must cover the highest priced unit. Again, say you want a two- or a three-bedroom. Your pre-approval must come through at the three-bedroom price. We can put you in, you can apply for more than one unit size. Your pre-approval is going to dictate which or how many unit sizes you're included. Again, pre-approval comes through at $330 for a three-bedroom. You are no longer eligible for a three-bedroom. You will only be in the lottery for a two-bedroom unit. Again, your pre-approval must be a fixed-rate mortgage. Adjustable-rate mortgages, you will automatically be disqualified for the lottery. Your pre-approval must show the unit purchase price, and it must show the financing amount. If it does not, you will not be included in the lottery. Or you can change financing amount to your deposit, your down payment. Either one is fine. If it doesn't have it, what your down payment is, it doesn't include the financing amount, I don't know what your down payment should be, so we're going to disqualify you for the lottery. And it must show a unit purchase price. Sometimes it'll say they can, you know, you've been approved for financing up to $275,000, but I have no idea what the unit purchase price is, so you're not going to be in the lottery for any unit size if the unit purchase price is not on the pre-approval. If your mortgage pre-approval does not have an expiration date, a lot of them do, some don't, then after 60 days from the date of issue, it will be considered expired. If your pre-approval expires after your application submission, we will accept it, but if you have an opportunity to purchase, you will need to provide an updated pre-approval. If it expired before we received your application, then you will not be included in the lottery. So you need to pay attention to that. People, I'm not kidding, have sent me a pre-approval that's 9 months old. That is long expired. Particularly with today's interest rates, they go up and down every week. So it needs to be a current one. If it doesn't have an expiration date, 60 days it's expired. If it expires after you submitted your application, we will accept it. If it expired before we received your application, we will not. So keep that in mind. If you are using a down payment assistance program, that needs to be mentioned in the pre-approval. All right, because your pre-approval should come through. You're buying a house at $336,100, and it'll say you're putting a 3% down payment, but if it says we're financing, I don't know, $300,000, and there is no mention in that pre-approval that you're using a down payment assistance program, we are going to expect to see $36,000 in your assets, liquid assets that you can use to purchase that property. And some may or may not have it, but again, it comes down to, that's why the down payment assistance program must be listed in the pre-approval. Okay? If it's not, we're going to look for the full value of that down payment, because that's what the financing amount will say. And if it doesn't say it, it won't be taken under consideration. So when you receive an email saying you don't have the funds for down payment and come back and say, well, I'm using the down payment assistance program, that's fine, but it wasn't in your application. So we're moving on. All right. So pay attention to that. We will determine your down payment again based on your pre-approval, purchase price, financing amount. The difference between the two is what your down payment is. If you're not using a down payment assistance program, we're going to look for those funds in your account. If they are not there, you're not moving forward, because these units, from what I'm told, will be ready for occupancy very quickly after the lottery. So there isn't any time for you to save up for the down payment. Some people will say, well, I'm going to use my tax return refund. That's great, but we don't know when you're going to get your refund. So we're not holding a unit for you while you wait to collect those funds. If you're getting your family member is giving you a gift for the down payment, we do not expect that gift money to be in your bank account, because at the time you apply, they don't know you actually will have an opportunity to purchase. So we understand that, but they need to provide a gift letter stating that they are going to gift you X number of dollars, and then they should probably provide a copy of the bank statement or whatever account those funds are coming from, so we know they actually have those funds. All right. Again, if you're getting a gift from a family member, we do not expect to see those funds in your account, but we expect that you provide the gift letter with your application. And again, if you're getting gift letter or down payment, you only need to have 1.5% of your own funds that we will be looking for when we review your application for asset eligibility. Okay, remember, you're responsible for down payment and closing costs. So we are only looking for down payment when we review your application for eligibility. We're not allowed by the guidelines we work under to make sure you have funds for closing costs, but it will be asked of you. If not us, it will be asked by the monitoring agent when they are reviewing your application for final approval, where are the funds from closing costs coming from. Okay, again, gift letter must provide a specific amount. If they say, we are giving Maureen O'Hagan between $10,000 to $25,000 as a gift, we're counting $25,000. And if that $25,000 puts you over the asset limit, you're out. So it should be for a specific amount. If it is a range, we will count the highest amount as the down payment. Again, we won't accept FHA, Rocket Mortgage, or Quicken Loans. They will not close on deed-restricted properties. That is a learned process. Online pre-approvals will not be accepted. You need to meet with your lender. They need to be reviewing your assets. They need to be checking your credit. They need to be reviewing your income. If it is an online letter, we're not going to accept it into the lottery, because you can go to any mortgage calculator, put in any amount of income, any amount for down payment, either greater than $75,000, and they'll print out a letter. So if it is an online letter, we won't accept it, because it really isn't worth the paper it's written on. If we will accept no pre-approvals where any information has been crossed out, whited out, and submitted with the application. Okay, so we're just not going to accept it, because something's changed. You're changing the dates, you're changing the dollar amounts. Don't write anything in on the pre-approval. We're only looking at what's printed on there from your lender. And finally, non-household members cannot be co-signers on the mortgage. Any question? I know there's a bunch of questions coming through, and I'm going to answer those next. But are there any other questions other than those that have written in the chat about the mortgage that you have questions for?
Does the gift letter have to be notarized?
No, it does not. Okay, so let me go back to the top of the chat, and I'll answer the questions. Same for a teacher contributing to the Mass Board. Yes, you need to provide your statement. Again, you don't have access to those funds. We know it, but you still need to provide it, mainly because we put it on. We do a financial summary sheet before we send all your information to the monitoring agent. We don't count it, but it is listed there. They want to know what the dollar is. Preference is given to Woburn residents. I'll get to that in a minute. Do we have to send all tax paperwork? Yes. We need, I'll get to that later, but we need the full tax return that is submitted to the IRS. We don't need your state tax return, but if you have a 10-page return that was submitted with between the two first two pages and all the attachments you need, we need all the attachments. How much do you have to pay for this? If you're asking us, is there a fee for you to submit an application to this lottery? The answer is zero. There are no fees to submit an application. I have, or just, no. I've answered this question regarding the tax returns from the same person. I'm not sure what you mean by Bank of America. I have no clue. Does a 401k loan for home purchase count toward, well, you know, no one's ever taken out a loan to purchase a home. I think that would count because you're taking money out. Well, I'm not sure. Can't answer that question directly. I got to do a little more research on that. Sorry. I thought the OnePlus doesn't cover Woburn. The OnePlus, as I understand it, and I am not a mortgage expert, the OnePlus loan is available to individuals who live in specific communities in Massachusetts. As long as you live in one of those communities, you can purchase in any community you want, okay? Usually they're like Boston, Lawrence, Lowell, Springfield, Taunton. There's other towns. You would need to get the full list. You have to live in one of those towns to qualify. If you live in one of those towns and qualify, you can then buy in any community in Massachusetts. But you've got to reside in one of those towns. Can I send you the pre-approval I have to see if it meets the requirements? Yes. Technically, I have three jobs. One is my first job is full-time, second part-time. I am also an active independent contractor for a driving company. Okay, so we're sending paid stubs for the first two jobs. The other is self-employment. It's sufficient to cover your last five pay stubs from your full-time and part-time job. That is sufficient to cover that income. However, if you're driving Uber or Lyft or whatever your independent contractor job is, you need to provide a spreadsheet for the last 12 months. Including your income on a monthly basis and your expenses on a monthly basis. So we will determine your income from that job based on your net income. Now, if you've already completed and submitted your 2024 taxes to the IRS, that is for the last 12 months, well, excuse me, for the 2024, that's already been calculated, and we can get that from your tax return. So you need to provide the January, February, and March, if you're sending it in after the end of March, what your income and assets were for those 3 months. And then we will project forward your income. Your income for that independent contractor job is based on net income. And then we will look at your 2024 tax returns plus the 3 months already. So 9 months in 2024 plus 3 months in 2025 to determine what income will count towards your asset limit. If you have not done your taxes yet, then you will need to provide an income and expense spreadsheet for the last 12 months. So it would be April 1st, 2024 through March 31st, 2025 to determine the income for the independent contractor job. Now, there's also a question here, how do I calculate income? We calculate income two ways. We're always projecting your income forward 12 months. We will base it once on your gross pay per pay period and then get the average of that and multiply by the number of pay periods in the year. You know, it's going to be 52, 26, 24, or 12. And then we look at the year-to-date, and we will divide by the number of weeks in the year, multiply by 52. Whichever is higher is going to count towards your income limit. We will also look at your tax return from the previous year. If there's a substantial difference between income, then we're going to ask questions. But otherwise, if it's about the same, we're just projecting your income the way we suggested it. Again, income is pay stubs, Social Security, retirement, alimony, child support. It all counts. So all sources of income will count in determining your income eligibility. Can the pre-approval letter show more than the home price? Yes. For example, I'm applying for a three-bedroom, but the pre-approval, that's fine. $350 covers the price of an affordable three-bedroom unit. You're absolutely fine. Where it gets tricky here is that pre-approval probably will state what the financing amount is or what your down payment is. And that's what we're going to use to determine the income, even though it may be less based on the actual affordable price. So that can get a little tricky. Okay, my loan amount is the amount of the house minus the $25,000 down payment, putting my 1.5 down. So her pre-approval is for a different amount. She'll need less on the pre-approval. That's fine. But again, that pre-approval has to state the down payment assistance program. Closing costs be gifted. A gift is a gift is a gift. So if you're getting a gift of closing costs, we need a letter from whoever gifting you the money. They don't have to say it's for closing costs. They just have to say they're gifting you X number of dollars. You can use it for closing costs if you choose. Salem 5 is a terrific lender, so yes, they're a good bank. The lender verbally told me the pre-approval lasts 3 months, but it doesn't have an end date on the paper. That's a problem. We're only going to count 60 days. If it doesn't have the pre-approval, the date it was issued on the pre-approval, then it also needs the expiration date. So if the expiration date is not there, if it's more than 60 days old at the date of the application deadline, you would not be reviewed or included in the lottery. So it's been over 2 months. I get it done and have them put an expiration date on it. The pre-approval is in the form of a PDF. Is that okay? Yes. Is the 38% ratio cap just for housing, or does it include just for housing? So it doesn't. We're not aware of your debts. We're not privy to that information. We're not privy to your credit score. So that is the 38 is the percent of housing. That's the math. Are you automatically disqualified if you have more than $75,000 in 401k? Not necessarily. I've gone over how we look at 401ks. Not necessarily. It depends if you can take an in-service withdrawal or not, a loan or not, or a hardship withdrawal or not. So you would need to provide that documentation if you look at your total assets and you're over the $75,000. HSA account towards asset? Yes, because you can withdraw that money. So that would count. No. Is the phone bill enough to prove address for local preference pool? It is not. We need a copy of your lease. We need a copy of your lease. Voter registration to prove that you're a part of the town. If you work in the town, your pay stubs will probably say, but just paying a phone bill through the town doesn't prove anything. You may not have changed your address if you moved out of town. That could be your parents' address. You now live in Boston. Doesn't mean you still live there. So no. I approved for WFA 4.0 that has no private mortgage. What? I've been pre-approved for a WFA 4.0 that has no private mortgage through Salem 5. Does this count? I don't know what a WFA 4.0 is. So I don't know what to tell you. Workforce? I don't know what that is. How do I represent that I can take a cash withdrawal from my retirement account to help with my, that would be an in-service withdrawal, so you need to provide the paperwork, you have a 401k handbook. In that handbook, it dictates how you can withdraw funds. So if you can take an in-service withdrawal, which is what I'm assuming this is when you're saying a cash withdrawal, then we need to know the total value. For down payment, you may only be taking out 3%, but you may have access to 40% of your 401k. It's that full 40% that is going to count towards the asset limit, less taxes and penalties. So we need if you have access to an in-service withdrawal, we need documentation from who's ever managing your 401k, what the total value is you have access to that you can withdraw. And from that, we will deduct taxes and penalties. Can I send my application via email only? Email fine. Is the max household income based on 2024 tax returns? No, because we're looking at your pay stubs. So, no, we're looking at your pay stubs to determine your income based on the 2024 income limits. The 2025 income limits have not been released yet. So we're looking at the 2024 income limits. What if there are other grant programs that aren't up yet and not listed on the pre-approval since it's not available yet? Can the person use that if they qualify and get an opportunity? But it depends what the program is. Mass Housing is available now. Federal Home Loan Bank is available now. So I don't know what programs that aren't available now that may be available at the time you close. So that's kind of on a case-by-case basis. Is a loan from Bank of America accepted? Bank of America tends not to close on deed-restricted properties. If you submit a pre-approval from Bank of America, we will send you a copy if you have the opportunity to purchase. If the pre-approval is correct, we will include you in the lottery. However, with Bank of America, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. If you have the opportunity to purchase, we will send you a copy of the deed writer. You will need to forward that to Bank of America, and they need to let us know in writing that they accept the deed writer and they will close on the unit. If they don't accept the deed writer, So Bank of America sometimes works and sometimes doesn't, mostly doesn't. So keep that in mind. What is the ratio of applications typically submitted to the bill? It's a crime. Usually 50 to 60% of the applications that are submitted for a lottery are not included in the lottery. That number goes up when we're reviewing all financial documentation. Last year for Woobin, when we just collected pre-approvals and reviewed pre-approvals, the number was higher that was included in the lottery. But again, once we start reviewing applications, I guarantee you 50, 60, 70% of the applications will have been submitted incomplete, and we will move on to the next buyer. That's typically the way it goes for any lottery we do. To determine net asset of 403B, does MTO deduct? Yes. We will deduct penalties. Absolutely. Yep. Can I pull out of my 401k for the one and that's between you and your 401k company. I don't know. You need to speak to them. Do you take into consideration Metro students who doesn't go to Woburn School? I'm going to rephrase that. You're asking me, you have children that is in the Metro program and they don't go to Woburn Schools. Then you're not going to be local. So Metro is allowed if they go to Woburn Schools. But if they're in the METCO program and they are not enrolled in a Woburn school, you're not going to be considered local. None of these units are ADA accessibly fitted. You can submit both. The question is, if I have two loan types both approved with the lottery program, can they both be submitted? Yes. What if my household is more than six? Would that be acceptable? And what would the income eligibility look like for a family of eight? Well, maybe is a question on whether it would work. You're limited. There's a specific square footage per bedroom. So you're looking at the three bedroom. One and two won't be applicable. So there's a minimum of square footage per bedroom for affordable units. I don't know off the top of my head what the square footage is for each bedroom in the townhouse. So it's 50 square feet per person per bedroom. So we'll have to look that up. And what I'm looking for now is the income limits for eight people. Hang on. I should have them. Just give me a second. Oh, here we go. The 2024 income limit for an eight-person household is $161,000, looks like $550. That's the maximum allowed. No. That's seven people. Hang on. I got to open something up. Give me a sec. Okay, the eight-person household is $171,950. That's the maximum you can earn for an eight-person household is $171,950. The question is, last year their max household income was $85,000 for households of two, and this year they projected their income will be $135,000 gross. You're going to be over the income limit because the maximum allowable income for a two-person household is $104,200. So if you're over the $104,200, and you know you are, if you know you are, by projecting your income forward 12 months, then there's no point in applying because we'll just deny you anyway. Okay? So if you know that for certain, I wouldn't bother to apply. Again, the new income limits will come out, but it's never going to go up $31,000. It won't go up that high to make you eligible. The 1099 works as a pay stub, right? No. The 1099 work tells us what you earned last year in 2024. That's the max you've earned last year. It doesn't tell me what you're going to earn this year. So if you have a 1099, you're self-employed, taxes have not been taken out of your paycheck, so you need to put together a spreadsheet with your income and expenses per month. We'll get your net income monthly. We'll average it out over the last 12 months, divide by 12, and determine what your income will, what the income is we will count towards your income eligibility. The 1099 only tells us what you earned in 2024. Everyone who's been approved to participate in the lottery will receive a lottery code. The question is, how does the lottery work? What should you expect during the lottery? So everyone will receive a lottery code. The lottery will be broken out into the local pool and the open pool, so we'll do two drawings. So we draw everyone out of the local pool. Everyone's ranked one through however many applicants there are. Everyone in the local pool is also included in the open pool. So local applicants have two opportunities for a unit. The second lottery we'll pull is the open pool, one through however many. That's the lottery. So post-lottery, and I'm skipping all around, so I'm going to skip stuff in the application. So post-lottery, after we've drawn the lottery, you are not required to be on the Zoom. It's not going to affect your ranking. Post-lottery, we will email you the lottery list as drawn, and we will also, the second attachment to that email, and then depending on the number of applications, it may take a while for you to receive these emails. We then break out the local pool, one and two bedroom and three bedroom, although the local pool is going to go through, it will be distributed through the open pool. And then we'll break out the open pool, one, two, and three bedrooms. And we break it out. We put you in where your ranking order is, where you will have the opportunity to purchase. So, so everyone will know where their opportunity is to purchase. Post-lottery, and that takes time depending on the volume of applications we receive, which I fully expect to be high. They have been well over 100 for the past two lotteries. So we send that to everybody so you know your order that we will call you to purchase. If you have the opportunity to purchase one of the initial applicants for the first 10 units, you will be notified again, a second email from us, letting you know that you have the initial opportunity and that we will begin reviewing your application. And again, if it's found you submitted an incomplete application, you will be notified and we will move on to the next applicant in the pool. And we will continue to do that until all the units are sold or has a buyer attached to it. If we exhaust any of the lottery lists, those that were included in the lottery, those that were not, meaning you submitted an incomplete application post-lottery, it was determined, you've submitted the missing documentation, you've been moved to the waiting list. If we exhaust the lottery list, if we exhaust everyone that was determined eligible and had the opportunity to purchase from the lottery list, and so we're zero across the board or for one or two bedrooms, then we will go to those who submitted their missing documentation that have been added to a waiting list. We will go to them. Again, review their application for eligibility. If it's full and eligible, we will then offer you a unit. I'm looking to apply for a unit with two heads of household. Can one of the head of households move out? And that you need to discuss with your lender. I have no idea. For the initial lease up, you're a two-person household. I'm assuming a couple. So you're in a one-bedroom unit. If you're no longer a couple, that's a legal thing. You need to talk to your attorney. I can't answer that. The grant I'm referring to is the Federal Home Loan Grant of Boston. Yes. I know that they can't lock down those funds for you unless you have submit a mortgage application. I know that. So that should be listed in your pre-approval that you will be applying for the Federal Home Loan Grant. Okay. Cause you can your lender can look into it now. He can't reserve those funds for you. And unless you have the opportunity to purchase and you submit a mortgage application, I know that. But that should be included in your application. Chase Mortgage, I think I just learned not long ago, Chase Mortgage does not close on affordable properties. So you want to ask them specifically if they close on affordable deed restricted properties where the affordability survives foreclosure. for some reason, and I can't say with 100% certainty, but I'm pretty certain Chase Mortgage does not close on deed restricted properties in Massachusetts. How many dogs can one have? I don't know. That's in the condo docs. I'm not going to say, I'll say no more than two, but I don't know for sure. That's in the condo docs, which you will receive at the time you receive your purchase and sale agreement. No, you need to send your last 3 years of tax returns. So if you've already filed and have your 2024 tax returns, then you need to provide 22, 23, and 24, all right? The application deadline is April 15th. And even then, if you submit your, you may have submitted your application before you did your 2024 taxes. In that case, we need the 2021, 22, and 23 federal income tax returns, but also your 2021, 22, 23, and 2024 W-2s, okay? If applying for the one or two condo, what is the parking situation? No, the parking situation is a surface parking. There is no garage parking for the affordable units. It's all surface parking. There are garage parking units for sale, and you would need to speak with the sales office if you can purchase one, but it's completely separate from the affordable housing. But the only thing that is offered for the affordable units is surface parking, and they are not deeded spaces. So it's first come, first serve. There's plenty of parking. If I'm applying as a one person for one household, do I include my boyfriend as a co-applicant if he's going to live there? Yes. You can get the mortgage in your own name. That's fine. But eligibility is based on the number of people who will be living in the unit. If your boyfriend's going to be living in the unit with you, you're considered a two-person household. But you can absolutely get the mortgage in your name only. One-person household, $88,000 gross income, started work in September, received a one-time $10,000 sign-on bonus. Yeah, that's a one-time bonus. We wouldn't count. That's a one-time as long as we have documentation to show. It's a one-time fee. You've been at your job for less than a year, so the application does request an offer letter. And that offer letter should state that you're getting a one-time $10,000 sign-on bonus. Fine. That's not going to count towards your income because it's one time. But you need to provide a copy, and this is in general to anyone. If anyone has a new job, they need to provide a copy of the offer letter when they submit their application. I have certificate from Mass Housing for first-time home buyers. What is your advice? How that it will? I'm assuming you're saying a first. You have a first. You've taken the first-time home buyer class. That's what I'm assuming here. Usually, the first-time home buyer class is required to be taken before you close. It does not give you an advantage of any sort in the lottery. Most everybody is going to have to take a first-time home buyer's class in order to close on the property. It doesn't give you a bonus or any kind of benefit applying for this lottery. Do you have standalone housing units? The only one we have here is there's one three-bedroom townhome. All the other units are condominium units. So there are, other than that townhome, there's no other standalone units. What percentage should be accepted or you consider those who apply if we're in Boston? If you're from any community outside of Woburn, you're going to be included in the lottery. You're not going to be in the local pool. You're only going to be in the open pool. So anyone can apply for, I've had people apply for lotteries in California and Florida because they're moving back to the area. So anyone can apply. It doesn't matter where you live. Will interest income savings count as income? Not really. That it counts interest income. That will count in rental. If you're applying for an affordable rental unit, the interest and dividend you've earned on accounts is added to your income. A certain percentage is added to your income. But for affordable housing, well, it counts in the sense that it's going to be counted as part of the ending balance in any of your accounts. So in that regard, it's counted. But it's not added separately. If the application is incomplete, so there is no chance to submit the missing documents, that would be correct not to have an opportunity to purchase. You can submit the missing documentation and you'll be added to the waiting list, but you will have lost your opportunity to purchase. Will all lenders listed on that? Yes. Will all lenders, the question is, will all lenders listed on the Mass Housing website close with the deed restriction? In my experience, that answer is yes. But what if the bank doesn't work with the Federal Loan Home of Boston? I already have my letter, and if I get chosen, I would consider going to another lender that offers the grant. Would I be able to use this grant if I qualify, et cetera, and get chosen despite it not being on the pre-approval letter now? Where it's going to affect you is you need to provide the down payment. So if you're expecting the Federal Home Loan Bank to provide your down payment and it's not on the letter, then we're going to look for that down payment funds in your assets. And if it's not there, you're out. So if you're going to apply, and I don't know if it's certain banks have the Federal Home Loan Bank on, I have no idea. That's where I'm not a mortgage expert. But what you're saying here, your bank does not provide the Federal Home Loan Bank funds. Okay. Go to a bank who does. They can add it on there. We're going to know the funds may not be available. But you need to understand if it's not, if the funds are gone, because the government releases X number of millions of dollars for the country. So if those funds are gone and locked up, then if you're planning on using the Federal Home Loan Bank down payment and it's no longer available, what are you going to do? So you need to think about that too. You may want to look at Mass Housing if that's what you're putting all your eggs in one basket. And I do not know if you can use Mass Housing and the Federal Home Loan Grant. I have no idea if you can do both. I will tell you, the money you get from Mass Housing and the money you get from the Federal Home Loan Bank does not count towards a $75,000 asset limit, okay? Any gift money you get from family does, but any down payment assistance programs through Mass Housing, Federal Home Loan Bank will not count towards a $75,000 asset unit. Do you accept pre-approvals from, yes, if as long as they close on deed restricted properties, they're in Massachusetts, we will accept it. Is excise tax bill considered for local? Just get a voter registration. Again, you could be living someplace else and your excise tax is based in Woburn, but you could be living in Watertown. So it really isn't a good thing. Get a voter registration. What is the max down payment amount that is allowed? Well, the asset limit is $75,000. Keeping in mind you're responsible for down payment and closing costs. I don't know what the closing costs are. The bank, if you have the opportunity to purchase and you've been approved, the bank is required to give you a good faith estimate of the closing costs at the time you submit a mortgage application. So right now, I'm going to say $5,000 to $7,000. I really have no idea. So, keep that in mind when you determine what your down payment is. Because if you have a $75,000 down payment, we will disqualify you because we know you need to still have funds for closing costs. So do the math. If you have the opportunity to purchase, before you go to purchase and sale agreement, arrangements will be made for you to visit the units and you can see what you're buying, but not before then. The unit is not furnished. The only, you're getting your kitchen appliances, that's it. You need to buy everything else, and you know you need to get the washer and dryer. How about the first-time home buyer class? Typically, it expires within a year or two. Will you have to attend the first-time home buyer class again? That's a question for your lender to see if they will accept the certificate with the expiration date. That's between you and your lender. What is exactly the paperwork that we should send with pre-approval? I'm going to get into that at the end. I'm assuming you're talking about pay stubs, tax return. It's all listed in the application. I'm not going to go into that now. Can you submit the application and scan PDF? Yes. I found another deed restricted unit in a different town. Can I submit applications for both? Absolutely. I would say to apply for as many affordable unit lotteries as you want. It doesn't disqualify you from anything, but keep in mind, if you commit to buying someplace else and you sign a purchase and sale agreement, that's when you're legally bound to a unit. So in Watertown, I don't know if you even have any current affordable housing available, but say you found a unit in Watertown you went under purchase and sale agreement, but you really wanted Woburn. That's, you're in a legal document, so that's when you're putting the down payment you've paid with the P&S agreement in jeopardy, okay? Because if you're canceling a sale to go to and to purchase, say, in Woburn, the developer does not need to give you your down payment back, okay? So that's what you're risking. But you can apply for as many units, as many for, and I encourage people to apply for 10 projects out there if there's 10 you're interested in. Keeping in mind, until you sign a purchase and sale agreement, you're not bound to anybody, all right? So absolutely, apply for as many as you want. Again, this, yeah, they asked Mass Housing and Federal Home Loan Bank. I have no idea. Again, Mass Housing, I think they give up to like $30,000. I'm not sure. I don't know how much the Federal Home Loan Bank gets, but we're going to see the difference. We're going to expect to see that down payment money. And so we don't know what the Federal Home Loan Bank is going to provide. So if your lender knows what you're going to be asking for, it would be really helpful to provide it on the application so we know. Yeah. You stated if you haven't filed your 2024 taxes, you can provide your 2024 W-2s and 21 through 20. Yes, I did. That's correct. My pre-approval states the type of loan is MHFA, FHB, first-time homebuyer. However, the email from the financial institution does state the pre-approval is contingent of X amount of owned funds and includes the amount of down payment. Yes, that would be acceptable. My approval does have a purchase and financing amount, but it doesn't explain the down payment amount. Well, if it has to explain that you're using Mass Housing down payment funds. It must be on the pre-approval. If it's not, we are not counting that, and we expect all the funds, including, you said, the $30,000, which is Mass Housing, would be your own funds. Your pre-approval has to say you're using the Mass Housing down payment assistance program. Has to. If it doesn't, I'm not counting it. Can I submit one application as a three-person household if I'm trying for a three-bedroom or a two-bedroom? Yes. You just need to check you want a two-bedroom and a three-bedroom. If I receive $25,000 down payment assistance, do I have to use my own money for 1.5 down payment? No, you have to use it. Well, you're proving it to me that you have 1.5%. My guess is that 1.5% is what you're going to provide to the seller when you sign your purchase and sale agreement. So you're going to be spending that money. Yes. Or do I have to prove I have it and save it for closing costs while using it? You have to provide money with the down payment when you sign the purchase and sale agreement. There is absolutely going to be a deposit you need to provide. The down payment, the Mass Housing funds, my guess, that is going to be provided at the time you close. So you're going to have to come up with funds for the closing costs. You have to put a down payment when you sign that purchase and sale agreement. They're either going to request 1.5% or 3%. But you have to put money down when you sign the purchase and sale agreement. What is, again, the max down payment amount? The asset limit is $75,000. That's the max. So I don't know what, beyond that, I don't know what to tell you. You can, this last question, and then I'm going to move forward with the meeting. If I'm applying for a one bed, one bath as a single individual, and am I eligible to apply for a two bedroom as well? You can. Understanding, everyone who requires a two-bedroom will have priority over you. So you may be first on the one-bedroom unit. You're going to be last on the two-bedroom unit. Because if you apply for a two-bedroom, everyone that actually requires a two-bedroom unit is going to have priority over you in purchasing a two-bedroom unit. So that applies to the three-bedroom as well. So just keep that in mind. But, yes, you can apply for both. And then say you're drawn first. You're going to have a decision to make. Do you want to take the chance and wait for a two-bedroom becoming available? If it doesn't, then you've lost the opportunity for a one-bedroom. So, I mean, that won't know how that plays out until the lottery's over, but keep that in mind. But, yes, one-person household can apply for two-bedroom units. Same with the three. Two can apply for three. Keeping in mind, those that require two bedrooms or three bedrooms will have priority over you. Excuse me. All right, moving on. I'm not going to answer any other questions for a bit. So there is a local preference. 7 of the units are for households who meet the local preference criteria, which is listed on the application, which states you are a current Woburn resident, you're employed by the town of Woburn or the Woburn Public Schools, you're an employee working, commuting into the town of Woburn for a company located in the town of Woburn, or you have an offer from an employer based in the town of Woburn, And then parents of children attending Woburn Public Schools, and that would include METCO students if they are attending Woburn Public Schools. So you only need to meet any one of those local preference criteria to be put in the local preference pool. But you need to provide documentation. So if you have children, you don't live in Woburn, you have children attending Woburn School, we need a letter from the school stating what grade your child is in that school. If you live in Woburn and you're renting an apartment, you need to provide a copy of your lease, a copy of voter registration. Again, people have asked if excise tax bill works or if phone bill works. Not really, because it doesn't mean you still live in that town. So, so you need to provide documented proof. If you work for the town or the school system, your pay stub's going to say Woburn Schools or the town of Woburn, so we're good with that. If your company is in Woburn or there's a branch of a company in Woburn, no. And you work for a branch of a company that's located in Woburn, meaning you work in Woburn, you're driving to Woburn every day, you work in Boston and then they have a satellite office in Woburn that doesn't work. And then you need to let us know that. Okay, the units are distributed based on household size. Household size is determined. There's at least one occupant per bedroom. A husband and wife or those in a similar living arrangement must share a bedroom. And there's one person per bedroom thereafter. So if you're looking for a two-bed, you're looking at at least one parent, maybe two, hopefully two, and one kid. Or three-bedroom is a single parent, a couple, two children. That's a three-bedroom unit. Parent, one kid, you're eligible for a two-bedroom unit. You may want the three, but you're only eligible for a two. If you put on your application, when we review your applications, in my spreadsheet I put the requested bedroom size you want and what you're eligible for. So the last lottery we did, I had single people, one person, only requesting a three-bedroom unit. So that's the only pool they had eligibility for, is for the three-bedroom, even though they were single, because they didn't check off a one-bedroom unit on the application, all right? So we put in this thing what you're eligible for, and we put in what you requested and what you're eligible for. And when we distribute the units, we go for what you're eligible for first. And again, you can put in two and three, but if you're a two-person household, you go to the bottom of the list for the three-bedroom unit. So if you only apply for a three-bedroom, you go into the bottom of the list and we have one unit, three-bedroom, and based on the number of applicants we had for the last lottery, we probably had 50 or more that requested a three-bedroom unit, which was, I don't know how many we had, five. So we never got that low to offer smaller households a unit. I expect that's going to be the same here. But it's your decision what you apply for. We will accommodate it. But we will accept zero changes to your application after the application deadline. So if you ask the lottery, you say, well, how many three bedrooms did you have? And I said 50. And you only applied for a three bedroom. We are not then going to put you in the two bedroom. That's not going to happen. Because everybody else that requires two bedroom and have their lottery code, even though your code may be higher than theirs, no. You applied for a three bedroom. That's the only pool. When we break it out by pool bedroom size, that's the only pool, you're only going to be in the three bedroom, no matter what your household size is. Okay, so we do look at household size carefully. If we exhaust the appropriate bedroom size, so say we exhaust all the applicants for a two bedroom unit, and there are some one bedroom applicants that require or requested two bedroom and their pre-approval covers the two bedroom price, then we will begin offering this, two-bedroom unit to the one-bedroom household. Keeping in mind, if you've already under a purchase and sale agreement for a two-bedroom and you applied for a two-bedroom, we're moving to those who have not had an opportunity to purchase first, okay? We're not going through I want the two-bedroom and I'm already signed the three-bedroom. That's not going to happen. Okay, if you are pregnant, that unborn child is counted as a household member. You do need to provide documented proof for it, for the baby, from your doctor. And again, if you're going through a divorce or separation, fine. I deal with a lot of women and men who've been divorced or separated. Your divorce and separation needs to be far enough along that the distribution of your household and family assets has been determined. If you have children, your child support has been determined. If you are too early in the process to have that documentation, then your soon-to-be ex is income, assets, home buyer status will count towards your eligibility, even if they will not be living with you. Does that make sense? So you need to be far enough along in the divorce process that we know what the distribution of assets are. And this will come from a legal document from your attorney. Okay. We're not going to accept a hand scribble between you and your spouse. So if you're not that far along, their income, everything you're providing us financial wise, they need to provide us, even if they won't be living in the unit. The reason for this is, and I know you'll be shocked, people have lied in the past, say they were divorced or going through a divorce, and then when they bought the house, that partner moved right in with them, so they were never getting a divorce. So the state tightened up the guidelines, so this is how it will work moving forward. All right, if you require a reasonable accommodation, you need to, or a special accommodation that needs to be provided at the time you submit your application, all right? We will not accept a request for reasonable accommodation after the application deadline. Now, there is a local pool here. 33.4% of the local pool applicants need to be minority. If not, then we will do what I call a mini lottery before we do the actual draw for the unit of the non-local minority applicants that have been determined eligible for to be included in the lottery. We will do a mini lottery to move over the number of non-local minority applicants to meet the 33.4% in the local pool. If we move non-local minority applicant into the local pool, they are now treated the same as every other local applicant, meaning they have two opportunities for a unit, okay? That I'm not going to know if we need to even do that until after we reviewed all the applications for the initial lottery. On the application, which I'll discuss it when we get there, there is a section about your family. That's where we determine your minority status. That is completely optional for you to complete. So if you don't complete it, it's a no. As far as we're concerned, are you minority? No. If you do complete it, we'll put yes. It's that simple. But that is part of the application that you would submit to us to be included in the lottery. Now, this is an affordable unit. It is deed restricted. And what that means is you're buying a property at below market value from what your neighbor, who isn't in an affordable unit, is paying. You're paying lower condo fees and you're paying a lower price on the unit. The legally binding document is the deed rider, and you will sign that deed rider at closing. Now, that deed rider includes what happens if your unit goes into foreclosure, all kinds of things. But it also will include your resale price multiplier. So when you go to sell the property, you are limited on the resale price. You're never going to get what your neighbor paid market value. You're never going to get the same equity that your neighbor paid for market value. And the purpose of the program is for you to get into an affordable unit. You can stay there for the rest of your life if you choose, or you can stay there for 5 years and then sell it and buy a market rate unit. How long you stay, there is no limit, but you will be limited on the resale price. So when you purchase the property, your resale price multiplier will be determined by taking the purchase price and dividing it by the median income at the time you purchase. Now, the median income right now in Boston, Cambridge, Quincy, which are the income limits we use for Woburn, the median income is $148,900. So if we were determining the resale price multiplier for the three-bedroom unit, we're going to take $336,100, divide it by $148,900, and the resale price multiplier is 2.25, okay? So when you go to sell your property, first of all, you notify the monitoring agent because they will sell it for you. They will price the unit for you. So you contact EOHLC and say, I'm ready to sell my unit. Your resale price multiplier, which they determine, this is just a guesstimate here, is say 2.25. So they're going to look up the median income. The median income changes on an annual basis. When HUD releases the income limits, part of that is the median income. So they're going to take the 2.25, they're going to multiply it by the median income at the time you sell, and that's your resale price. So if the median income goes up, you're going to make money. If the median income stayed the same or went down, the home will be sold for what you paid for it, all right? So there's no guarantee you're going to earn any money on it, but they are stating you will not lose money when you sell the property. Now, added to that resale price you're going to get is a resale fee that is paid to the organization who sells that unit. We do resales for EOHLC. So if it comes to us, that 2% that's added to your price, we will get that 2% when that unit closes. Now, you are able, if you have to do any capital improvements, and capital improvements are something, everything has to be in working order when you sell your property. So if you've been there long enough and you've had to replace the refrigerator or any of the appliances, or your heating system blew out, or you needed a new water heater, those are capital improvements. If, you know, you're in the building, you've been there 20, 30 years, the roof needs to be replaced, they don't have enough funds in the reserve fund, then every homeowner in the property gets, or in the building gets, I don't know how they'll do it, it's not my business, you get an assessment, you know, $8,000 you need to pay to cover the cost of the roof. That's considered a capital improvement. So if able, a capital improvement may be able to be taken under consideration when you sell your property. In order for that to happen, at the time you need to do the work or replace the appliance or the water heater or whatever, you need to notify EOHLC at the time the work is done. And at the end of the day, you need to provide them with a paid invoice. They will put that in your file. And if they are able to take it under consideration when you sell, prorated, you're never going to get dollar for dollar back. They will. But what the monitoring agent is making sure of is that unit is still affordable to the next buyer. So if your capital improvements, you know, you had a lot, they may or may not be able to take them under consideration. All right. Because at the end of the day, the sale price has to be affordable to the next buyer who is applying under the same eligibility criteria as you did, you know, X number of years later. So the income limits have increased and all that. So if they are able to include that, they can. Now, if say you wanted to, I don't know what you're getting in the units. I haven't seen them yet. So say you wanted to switch out, say that you have linoleum countertop and you want to put in granite. Say you have carpet in the unit, which I know you do, and you want to rip it out and put in all hardwood floors. It's your home. You can do what you want. Those kinds of things are not considered a capital improvement. They're considered for your enjoyment. So you will not get any money back when you do that kind of upgrades in your property, okay? So keep that in mind. You will sign those who have the opportunity to purchase will sign a what's called a home buyer disclosure statement. That's kind of a summary of the deed writer, and it goes into capital improvements. It provides the contact information at EOHLC, which, of course, if you're there for 20 years, you know, may be out of date. But so you will find that. So that summarizes the deed writer. If anyone wants a copy of the deed writer to review, send me an email. I'll be more than happy to send it to you. There's a different deed writer for Mass Housing, so you need to identify which projects you're interested in. Highland at Vale, I know it's the EOHLC, that's fine. So you need to tell us what the specific property is. Now, EOHLC, again, they're the monitoring agent. You're not paying that 2% fee. You don't have to hire a broker unless you want to and you are paying them. It doesn't come out of your, the 2% fee that comes to me or my company or company similar to mine. So you're saving 5% right off the top, because you don't have to hire a broker. You still need to hire an attorney, because there are documents your attorney will need to prepare in order to close, but you do not have to hire a broker. All right, how much money do I need to make to afford a unit? That's between you and your lender. You know what the maximum income you can earn. The minimum income you need to qualify is really based on your down payment. So So that's between you and your lender. We have no idea. You know, the lender just sends us a pre-approval and we take it for what it says. So it's between you and your lender as far as, how much you need to qualify for a home. All right. Any questions on any of that? I have two more questions. How many applicants? I have no idea. We haven't, submitted. Don't go nuts on the questions. We haven't, put the applicants in a spreadsheet yet, so I have no idea how many three bedrooms there are. Yeah, there are any, if you're in the condo, all the roof repairs are done by the condominium association. Well, that's what I just said. So this question is, I have a one bedroom unit, I paid $265,500. They sell it in 2 years, the median income goes up, they'll make money. If the median income goes down, it will not go lower than $265,500. That's what I said. Pretty much guaranteed that the unit will not be priced lower than you paid for it. My email is Maureen, M-A-U-R-E-E-N, at mcohousingservices.com. Did you say we needed our lawyer at signing? I would recommend anyone purchasing get their own lawyer. You're a first-time home buyer, so someone to review the purchase and sale agreement, explain things to you that you may not understand. So I think having your own attorney is beneficial. You are paying for that attorney. You're also paying for the bank's attorney as part of your closing costs. Some people will use the bank's attorney because they're already paying for them to review your purchase and sale agreement. You need to understand the bank's attorney's first priority is to the lender, not to you. So, you know, the purchase and sale agreement for Woburn is pretty straightforward, very many pages, but they typically don't accept, last I heard anyway, any changes to the purchase and sale agreement. So, yeah. So we recommend you hire an attorney. You're a first-time home buyer. There's a lot of things you don't understand about this. So we, you know, you should get your own attorney. All right. So the lottery process. I'm not going into detail because I've already been over this, but there's two pools, the local pool and the open pool. There's 7 one-bedroom units. 5 of them are dedicated to the local pool. 2 are in the open pool, 2 bedrooms. There's 2 units, 1 local, 1 open. The 3 bedroom, there's 1 unit, and that will be distributed through the open pool. Now, if we exhaust any, you know, say for the 5 one-bedroom units in the local pool, we only have 4 or 2 one-bedroom applicants, then we will move to the open pool to fill those units, okay? But that means we've exhausted all the one bedroom local pool applicants before we offer the local pool units to the open pool. Okay. So the local pool only, it ends at the application deadline. Okay. So if anyone submits their application late, there is no open pool. If we have to go to the waiting list to fill units, there is no open pool anymore. The open pool is only going to be used for the initial offer of the unit. So if we exhaust the one-bedroom applicants in the local pool that applied and were determined eligible for the lottery, then we will fill the units from the open pool. And that's the same for the two-bedroom units, and that's the same for the three-bedroom, although I don't expect we will be offering local pool three-bedroom units because I think we'll have more than enough three-bedroom applications. All right, so again, each applicant will receive a lottery code, which will be a combination of 3 letters of your name. My name, Maureen O'Hagan, may be MHG, okay? It doesn't matter. We just make them up. Local applicants will have 2 opportunities to purchase the unit by being in the local and open pool. All as eligible applicants will be pulled. We only announce your lottery code during the lottery. We do not announce your name to protect your privacy. The lottery determines the order of selection based on your ranking, household size, lottery pool. I've already explained. Post-lottery, we will break out the local list into one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and three-bedroom, and the highest-ranked applications for the one-bedroom local pool will be offered the first 5 units first. Same with the two-bedroom. We got 1 unit in the local pool, so the first person who was drawn requiring a two-bedroom highest ranked in the local pool will have the opportunity for that unit, meaning we'll start beginning to review your financials. If those financials are incomplete, we'll go to the next person on the list, and we'll continue to do that until that one two-bedroom unit is filled. And the three-bedroom unit is only in the open pool, So we will start with the highest ranked open pool applicant that requires a 3-bedroom will have the first opportunity to purchase. So really, in the lottery list, when we pull it out, the ranking 1, 2, 3, 4, however, unless you come in first and you know you're in the open pool 3-bedroom, no one's going to know who gets a unit. Because the first person on the list for a 3-bedroom unit could be in the 6th place. Okay? So that's why I will break out the units based on pool, so everyone knows where they stand in having an opportunity to purchase. Okay? Because that second list that I'm going to put together, the list I'm going to put together, because the lottery list is as we were drawn, so it's going to be my handwritten list that you're sent. But the second one, I will break it out in Excel. 1, 2, 3, local pool and open pool. Okay. So the highest rank for each size will have the initial opportunity. We will offer the units same for the local pool and the open pool. Local pool applicants can select their unit locations first, and then the open pool will take what's left over. And just please remember, we are reviewing your financial documentation post-lottery. And if the required documentation is missing, you will lose the opportunity to purchase. And we will continue through the lottery list until we've determined all the buyers. Again, homes will not be offered to smaller households unless all applicants meeting the household size criteria have been offered a unit. Again, if we exhaust the 3-bedroom units in the open pool, we will go to the local pool. Well, no, that's not true, because everyone in the open pool will have the open pool includes local and open together. So if we exhaust the 3-bedroom applicants in the open pool, we will begin offering units to a 2-bedroom household. I don't expect that to happen, but I don't know what we're going to get. I expect I'll see more of it maybe in the 2-bedroom, there's only one available. So I don't think any of it's going to happen this go round. But anyways, everyone will have the opportunity for their selected unit size if they meet their unit size first before we offer the smaller units. So my understanding, the units are going to be available for immediate occupancy is what I was told. However, construction is delayed everywhere these days. So prior to the lottery, I will confirm with the sales office or my contact at Pulte what's the status on closing. But my guess is we were a little late starting this lottery, so my guess is the units will all be available. So we are going to move forward as quickly as possible to get your review, get your final eligibility approval, send you to the leasing office or the sales office so you can select a unit and move forward with the purchase and sale agreement. So my understanding, they are all available for immediate occupancy, so we will move quickly in getting your eligibility. If there by chance, I don't expect it to be, a delay of more than 2 months, we're not going to send out your review for eligibility because it's outdated. So you would have to update your financial documentation. Again, still be eligible. And then if you're eligible then we would send your information to the sales office. But I'm fairly certain, unless there's been something drastic has happened, which I have not asked about, everyone will move forward for the 10 units right away. That's my guess. Now, the way Pulte closes, they close the 4th floor units first, then the 3rd, then the 2nd, then the 1st floor units. So they're not all going to close in the same week. Okay, so that's going to be the separation of closer. 4th floor, 3rd, 2nd, and 1st. So there may be delays between floors, but that is between you and Pulte at that point in time. Your closing date will be included in the purchase and sale agreement. We get a copy of the purchase and sale agreement. So we work with you and Pulte right until you close, but we work based on the closing dates that are in your purchase and sale agreement. So if there's any adjustments to that, meaning your pre-approval, your closing date has been extended, then we get a copy of the amendment to the purchase and sale agreement that provides the new closing date. So we will then work off that date. Okay, but once we get your approval through the monitoring agent, we're always involved in the process and you can certainly call us, but at that point, you're mainly working with your attorney and Pulte's attorney once you've selected your unit location to close. All right, so I think I've talked about all that. All right, so the sample affordability analysis that is included in the application, That's based on the interest rate at the time we created the pricing, which is a formula that we have to use for EOHLC. So this affordability analysis is a sample only. So your monthly total expense may be a little higher, maybe a little lower. That's between you and your lender. But the advantage of like the one mortgage program or mass housing, for example, the one bedroom unit, you know, the private mortgage insurance, where if you're putting less than 20% down, you pay PMI and the whatever. The private mortgage insurance, you're automatically saving $164. Okay. So that's what the PMI is estimated to be, based on a 5% down payment. 185 for the two bedroom and 208 for the three bedroom. So that's kind of the benefit of using a first time home buyer program, because you're not paying private mortgage insurance and you're saving money. The one mortgage program, again, you're paying a lower interest rate, than you probably will for mass housing. But mass housing, you get the down payment assistance, so you need to figure out which is most advantageous for you. The next page is a list of all the affordable units. Again, all the condominiums have surface parking. The one three-bedroom townhome that's available through the open pool only, that has a two-car garage, okay? Your monthly condo fee includes insurance, studs out, landscaping, snow removal, street maintenance, trash removal, common areas, vacuuming and stuff, maintenance on the building, not necessarily your unit, reserve fund and administrative fees. Again, your monthly condo fees are not fixed. They will increase. Trust me, I live in a condominium association. They go up every year, all right? So expect they are not fixed. All right, so the next several pages of the application are copies of the floor plans, which I'm not going to spend any time on. You can review those at your leisure. And we're going to start working on the application. Before I do that, are towns close to Woburn considered as local applicants? No, only those people who live or work or go to school in Woburn is considered a local applicant. Median occupancy, from what I'm told, the open pool for the three bedroom. Martin's Landing isn't posted. I'll have to check that because it should have been. It's that's interesting. I will check that tomorrow. Is there a debt-to-income ratio limit for the monthly house? That's between you and your lender. The debt-to-income ratio. That's between you and your lender. You cannot pay more than 38% of your monthly housing cost for housing. But debt-to-income is between you and your lender. We're not privy to that information. All right, so the application. The first page, contact information, select your bedroom size, check off if your local preference, and provide the required documentation. This is the page you need to list everyone who's going to be living in the unit. Add your name. I mean, your name is under the personal information. It should be under, again, under household composition. So we need your name, your age, and then everybody else listed living in the house, their relationship to you, and their age. You need to provide your employer status. If you have more than one employer, you can certainly attach a separate piece of paper and list them all there. That's fine. We do ask for the borrowers and co-borrowers, any adults 18 or older, your estimated monthly gross income. That just kind of gives us a starting point in reviewing your application. Your household assets, you need to provide the current balance for each of these assets. And then you also need to provide the corresponding paperwork, which I'm going to get to in a bit. And this section about your family, which is optional, that's where we determine your minority status. If you meet one of these, Black, African American, Asian, Hispanic, Latino, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander, Native American, Alaskan Native, it can work and may work to your advantage to check yes if it applies. Or you don't have to fill it out at all. You can leave a blank. One way or the other, I don't care. I care if we need to move minorities into the local pool. That's where it's going to be to your advantage to fill that section out. Okay, so it's up to you whether you do or not. And then you need the signing date on page 20, every household member 18 years of age or older. The next section is the affidavit and disclosure form. You need to read signing date. Okay, so now we're getting into the nitty-gritty. So I work in affordable housing. I am all for everyone who applies to have the opportunity to purchase or rent an affordable apartment. I get incredibly frustrated with the amount of applicants that submit an incomplete application. So unfortunately for you guys at this point, there's no sympathy from me. There will be no exceptions made. I think we do a pretty good job of listing all the documentation that are needed. We give explanations of, you know, notes on how to help yourself. But clearly in reviewing applications, people are not reading the applications. So, and that's why we have such a huge number of incomplete applications. And it is not just MCO Housing Services who has this problem. It's everybody who's in the industry who reviews applications. So I'm beyond frustrated when it comes to that, which is why I'm beyond any sympathy for people who miss something. We are here to answer your questions. You can send us a pre-approval. We'll proof it to make sure it's accurate. We're here for you to ask questions. Should I or shouldn't I include this paperwork? If you don't call us and ask us these questions and your application's incomplete, that's on you. That is not on us. And that's where you don't get any sympathy from us. So I put together this application tip sheet, which is where I have found most of the mistakes are. People are always finding new ways to not complete an application. But these are the main ways that I've seen. So I put this together for, again, another level of assistance for you to provide a complete application. So, first, well, the second thing. One, you need, we have put notes under certain sections, like your bank statements, your pay stubs, your tax returns. We have put notes on there. You need to read those notes. If you don't, it can be the difference between a complete and an incomplete application, and it will be the difference between, it can be the difference between being eligible and being ineligible, okay? So the notes are there for a reason, so please read them. All financial documentation, income, assets, taxes are required from all household adults age 18 or older, and there is no exception. Don't tell me I didn't provide it because my kid's a full-time college student. More than likely, they're working in the summer. If they're working on campus, they have a checking account. They may have a savings account. They may have paid taxes. So there's no exception to not provide that documentation, okay, at all. So anyone 18 or older, it is counted. They need to provide the documentation. All asset statements must include your name, your account number, and your institution name. Some people will just bring up an account on their phone, take a picture of the phone, and then email that to me. No, because more than likely it will not have your name on it. It may not have your institution name. It's just going to have a balance. I don't know if that's your account or your friend's. So you need to actually print out the statements. Do not take photos of your phone. I'm going to get into it, but one of the notes under the bank statements is you need to print out copies of your actual bank statements, not a running transaction list for 3 months. That usually maybe will include your account number. It doesn't include the institution name, and it doesn't include your name. So we won't accept it, and you'll be out. I mean, no holds barred here. You're gone. So you need to provide the actual statements, not a photo on your phone, not a running transaction list. So if you provide an asset statement without your name, your account number, or the institution name, at that point we're going to stop reviewing your application. We'll send you an email that your application is incomplete, and we'll tell you why. And then you've lost the opportunity for Woburn. Do not take any photos or copy your statement from your phone. Everything, if you're emailing us, it must be submitted in a PDF. I don't know if you can put photos on your photos of the phone in PDF, but you know what I mean. You need to get a copy of the statement that has the account name, account number, institution name on the top, okay, and send it to us. Okay, do not assume you do not need to provide a certain document. When in doubt, email us, call us, we'll do our best to answer the question, or just provide a documentation. If we don't need it, we will shred it, okay? In my opinion, it's better to provide too many documents than missing something because you don't think we need it, okay? Now, I just have to say this, All the documents we request are based on the guidelines we work under, okay? So I'm not asking for anything unless it's that we need to get you approved to purchase, okay? So don't second guess us, because again, I guarantee you're going to come out on the losing end. If we request something, just provide it, okay? Don't fight us on it, all right? Some people will fight us on it, and the way we're going to look at it is you're fighting us on it because you have more money than you say you do, and you're trying to hide it, okay? And at that point, we're not even going to work with you anymore, okay? So just provide the information. But if you have questions, should you or shouldn't you, call us, email us. That's what we're here for. Take advantage of us. Some people seem to think that the dollar amount for, say, a 401k or 403b on your pay stub is the value of your account, or on your W-2 is the value of your account. It is not. That's the amount you put in either year to date, if it's a pay stub, or on a W-2, that's the amount of money you've just contributed that year to your 401k or 403b. That doesn't give us the cumulative value for all the years you've been working for that company, which is why we need the actual statements, not that. Some people have argued with me. They've lost. Send the statements. Okay. Don't forget, if you have a Robinhood, an Acorn, any kind of online account, those are counted as part of your assets. So you need to make sure you provide those statements as well. Now, some people have argued to me, well, there's no money in that account, in the Robinhood account. I go, I don't know that. For all I know, the value of that account is $500,000. So that's why you need to provide the statement for Robinhood and those kinds, just the last statement, so we can see what the actual value of that account is at the time we review your application for eligibility. Okay, if you are unable to provide specific information, then submit a note with your application explaining the circumstances. For example, I had a woman apply for a lottery a few years ago. She did not provide a copy of her 401k, so I disqualified her. What I didn't know or understand is she had the new job, so she hadn't been there long enough to get a statement. Had she told me that as part of her application, it would not have been an issue. She did not. So the only way I could look at it is that it was an incomplete application, okay? So if there are circumstances that you can't get the documentation, let us know. And if we can, we will work with you. If we can't, at least you've tried. Now, someone submitting their application on August 14th with the deadline 15th and saying, I couldn't get this, this, or this document, that's on you. That's not on us, because you waited so long to apply, all right? People always say, can I send you the pre-approval after the deadline? No. You know, if you submit it, it's late and it's not going to be counted. So just keep that in mind. Again, we don't recommend you take any photos with your cell phone and email it to us. 9 times out of 10, it's illegible, it's blurry, it's crooked, and we can't read it. Okay. And also, we're not going to spend 20 minutes printing out every photo you sent in an email. No, it's not going to happen. So you need to make sure, if you take photos, fine, but you need to print them out and then add them to, as long as they're legible, add them in a PDF and email it to us. But don't insert a copy of photos in the body of an email, because no, I'm not spending my time printing out 20 photos of a document. You can fax your information. It's not recommended. Sometimes people will fax from like Staples or whatever other companies are out there, and sometimes we don't get all the pages. That's on you, not on us. So we will accept the fax, but you're better off sending an email, dropping it off in our office, which is in Harvard, Mass., or mailing it. All right, so now we're getting to the nitty-gritty of the documents you need to provide with the application and how we use them, okay? So let me just go through a little bit, a few more questions, because there seem to be piling up. Oh, repeat my email. My email is Maureen, M-A-U-R-E-E-N, at mcohousingservices.com. And it's also on the last page of the application. The email is lotteryinfo@mcohousingservices.com. But if you wanted to, that's a general one. If you wanted to come to me, It's Maureen at mcohousingservices.com. For Highland and Vail, the units are only for purchase. There are no units to rent. If you're looking to rent an affordable apartment, you can go on our website, mcohousingservices.com, click homes to rent, and see what we have available. I work for a financial institution that merged. This is tricky. So we've had this happen before. Their company was bought out, and I'm assuming I'm correct here. If I'm not, correct me. Which basically means last year you may have worked for that company, and it was called ABC Company, and then they merged, and this year you're working, and it's called XYZ Company. That's fine. If it happened within this year, 2025, then basically when we worked at this before, you've got two separate pay stubs for 2025. So you have a pay stub that ended, say, in February 1st that has a year to date, and then your pay started anew under the new company, in March 1st. Okay, so you have two different W-2s at the end of the year. If that's the case, and I'm understanding what you've asked me, you still need to send the last five pay stubs, even if it's two different companies, because I'm assuming you're receiving the same pay. But in that case, you absolutely need to provide a letter with your application that explains the companies merged. The old company name was ABC. The new company name is XYZ. But you do need to, if the pay stubs over, no, you still need to provide the old pay stubs because your year-to-date is going to be off because you'll have the year-to-date with ABC Company, and then you'll start the payroll with the XYZ Company. It's going to start fresh. So you would need to provide the last, if it's this year, 2025, you need to provide the last pay stub you received for ABC if it's older than the last five stubs, plus the last five pay stubs for XYZ. I hope that makes sense. Who should I contact from? I don't know. Your lender. Go on masshousing.com. There is a full list of lenders who lend on the Mass Housing program, and you can contact any one of them. We also have four lenders on our website. You can use any one of those. Each one of them is a Mass Housing lender as well. Okay. Who should I contact for Mass Housing down payment assistance? My understanding was that the lender will grant as they work with the program. Well, yes. If a lender is a Mass Housing approved lender, then they, I believe anyways, I'm not an expert here, that they can lend on the Mass Housing down payment program. If you're an approved Mass Housing lender, they can prepare your pre-approval using the Mass Housing down payment program, if I'm understanding your question correctly. They're asking which, how do you prefer to receive your application? We prefer it by mail or drop off, but we will accept email. We are in Harvard, Mass. The recording would be available on our website under the Woburn listing. And I know someone mentioned North Reading. I got to check that because I could have sworn I sent it. So I will check that tomorrow and make sure that's posted as well. But it will be posted under Homes for Sale on our website and under the Woburn posting. I think it's the fourth one on the top line of the application. They merged, so part of the previous fiscal year still exists. Okay, if that was in 2024, then it's not going to affect us. This is back to the new company that was bought. If they merged and that all took place in 2024, so you would have two separate W-2s for 2024, but for your pay stub for 2025 should just be the new company starting in January. So if that's the case, I don't need a copy of a letter from the company. Actually, yes, send it because I'm not. Say the merge happened as of January 1st when you got the new pay stub, I'm going to see W-2s from ABC Company, and I'm not seeing pay stubs from ABC. So it's going to be clear to me that you're working for a new company. Okay, so provide that letter because that will explain the difference. Yes, that will explain the difference. For Safeguard, are we able to mail it and send a copy? Yes. Yes. However, the post office is nasty these days, meaning it's taking long to get from point A to point B. So if you're mailing it, it has to be postmarked on or before the April 15th deadline. And the post office, because I've gone and talked to them because I was angry at them at one point. It took 6 weeks once they get a piece of mail to us. I was not happy. But what they suggested is if you're going to mail it, that you send it priority or certified mail so you have a tracking number so you can track it where it is. It's still taking a long time to get mail. But we also, because if people mail it, it has to be postmarked on or before the application deadline, which is April 15th, and we have to receive it on or before April 29th. So if we get a mail piece that was postmarked the 15th, but we don't get it until April 30th, you're not going to be included in the lottery, okay? We had to provide a cutoff date because and it's 2 weeks, which should be more than enough, because we need to review the applications for eligibility. How long to resell a unit? When we do resales, we usually have a buyer within a couple weeks. It depends. It's a hot market right now, certainly for affordable housing with the interest rates and everything. So the units are going very fast. If we're in a downside where no one's buying because of the economy and stuff, it can take longer. So at that point, if we're unable to find a qualified eligible buyer, who I don't do resales myself, someone else in our office does, you know, right now, seriously, the units are sold within 2 weeks, any resale we've had. That's in good shape. We've had some that have not been well maintained, that take longer, but if the unit's in good shape, it usually will sell within 2 weeks. In a good market, we're in a good market right now. If the economy tanks and no one's buying, it's still going to take a little bit longer to sell. All right, so we've talked about the mortgage pre-approval. FHA, Rocket, Quicken, not accepted. I would suggest you provide the pre-approval guidelines and additional mortgage specifics to your lender. Local preference, you need to provide proof, copy of lease, utility bill, voter registration, pay stubs, letter from Woburn School, etc. if your child attends. If you require reasonable accommodation, you must request that at the time of application and provide any supporting documentation, which is typically a letter from your doctor. Okay, so the nitty-gritty. You need to provide the last 5 pay stubs, all right? Last 5 consecutive pay stubs. And we use your pay stubs to determine your income eligibility along with other sources of income if you have it. So we are projecting your income forward 12 months. I've already explained, but I'll go over it quickly here in case some people are new. Your income is determined 2 ways. One, we project it based on the gross pay per period, multiply the average over 5 pay periods, and then multiply by the number of pay periods you get, 12, 24, 26, or 52. And then we look at the year-to-date, the gross year-to-date. We'll divide that by the number of weeks in the year, which we get from the website, timeanddate.com, and then we will multiply that number by 52. Whichever is higher is going to count as your income. We will look at your 2024 W-2s. If there's a significant difference in your income, you know, you earned $200,000 last year and you're projected to earn $90,000 this year, we're going to ask questions, okay? Just know that you're going to hear questions from us. Now, we also look at your pay stub. We'll know if you have a 401k or a Roth IRA or a 403b or whatever you have, retirement account, pension. That is so the deduction will show on your pay stub. So we're going to know that. So we're going to make a mental note when we are reviewing your pay stubs that you have a 401k or whatever your account is, and we'll expect to see the corresponding statement when we get to the asset portion of your review. If you have direct deposit, which most employers use these days, we're going to know it because it's going to say, usually, goes into a checking account. Sometimes it'll just say checking account 1. Most of the time it will give the last 4 digits of your checking account number. So if it's going in 1 bank, 3, 5, it usually gives the last 4 digits of the number. So if they give the last 4 digits of your account number, we're going to match that account number to the bank accounts that you provide us to review your application. So I would recommend you look at that pay stub, because if there's 5 accounts and you didn't provide us 5 bank accounts that match those numbers, you're an incomplete application. I mention this because people have like an emergency fund account that they put money in. They never touch it. They forget they have the account because it's an automatic deposit from your bank account. So you may forget to provide it to us, okay? We won't miss it when we're reviewing your information. So just take a look at that, your pay stubs, and make sure you're providing all the bank statements, corresponding bank statements with us. Doesn't mean you don't have other bank accounts. You need to provide those as well, but make sure you're providing all those that are listed on your pay stub. Now, if you are unemployed, you get a letter stating this is how much your benefit is on a weekly basis. This is the start date. This is the end date. So we need that documentation. And then we also need the pay history that shows us, you know, when it started, how much you have earned, okay, and how much you get per week. Sometimes that varies, which is why we need that documentation. Same if you're on disability, long-term, short-term, your benefit amount has been determined, so we need that letter showing us how much you're getting. The reason we need these letters is because your income is based on gross income, not net. So I don't know if your workers' comp, your severance pay, disability, unemployment, if taxes are being taken out or not, which is why you need to provide the corresponding documentation for that income source, all right? I don't think you pay taxes on workers' comp. Not sure about that. But I know you have the option on unemployment to have taxes taken out or not. That's why people will say to me, well, you can see on my bank statement that I get unemployment or Social Security or anything. And I go, that is correct. But I don't know if it's gross or net, which is why we need the backup documentation that goes along with it. All right. So if you have obtained a new job within the last 12 months, you must provide an employment offer letter, which needs to include your income, be it hourly or salary, okay? The letter can't just say Maureen O'Hagan has accepted a job at ABC Company and will be starting on June 1st. The letter means nothing to me because when you're in a new job, we use that letter in determining your income eligibility, all right? If you are no longer working for an employer you worked with in the last 12 months, you must provide a letter from the employer with your separation date. We're really close to the first of the year, so any 401k that you're submitting, I'm 401k, W-2 that you're submitting or 1099 that you're submitting with your application, if you're not working for any one of those employers, you need to provide a letter stating you're no longer working there, or if you're, you know, quit a job in 2025, you're no longer working there. Okay, so that you need to provide.
Unknown caller.
Sorry, scared the heck out of me. And again, as a reminder, you need to provide 5 pay stubs, whether you are paid weekly, biweekly, or semi-weekly, or monthly. You need to provide 5. Okay, if you're receiving Social Security, annuities, insurance, retirement, pension, disability, death benefits, or any other type of similar periodic receipts, those are counted as income. You need to provide the corresponding letter. If you have Social Security or one of your kids is on SSDI or SSI or whatever, you received a benefit letter at the beginning of the year from Social Security to let you know how much you're getting with the cost of living increase. You need to provide us with a copy of that letter, all right? Again, don't say you're going to see it in my tax return, my bank statement. I know I am, but again, I don't know if it's gross or net. So you need to provide a copy of those letters. If you have an annuity investment and you're getting X number of dollars a month, we need that letter, and the letter may be 3 years old by this point, and you're just still getting the same dollar amount, that's okay. But we need to know what the gross amount was versus what you're getting in deposited into your account. And the same applies for retirement, pensions, disability, death benefits, or anything. We need that letter that explains, that provides the gross amount you're getting. All right, child support alimony. It's getting late. Wow. Child support, if you're receiving child support, let me phrase. If child support was awarded to you in your divorce agreement and you're receiving it, we need a copy of your divorce agreement. If you're getting it through the Department of Revenue because it was awarded to you and you weren't getting it and you took them to court or her to court, the DOR, you can provide a statement that provides tells us how much you're supposed to get and the frequency of that, weekly, biweekly, monthly. And then there's also, it tells us if he's in arrears or she's in arrears and paying child support. And you also need to get the pay history for the last 12 months. Because if you are awarded child support and you're not receiving it, we will know that based on the pay history. If you're not receiving it, we're not going to count it, okay? So you need to provide that documentation. If you were not, if you were not awarded child support, you haven't taken the parent to court, and you're not getting child support, there's a form in here called the child support, custody and child support affidavit. You can fill that out stating you're not receiving any child support. And this form is on page 28 of the application. You need to complete one form per child. All right. If you are receiving child support, an informal agreement between you and your child's parent, then they need to provide that documentation, a letter. Maureen O'Hagan is providing, you know, my child informally X number of dollars a month, and that is what we will count as child support. If you are self-employed, again, we've talked about it earlier, you need to provide an expense, an income spreadsheet, profit and loss for the last 12 months, income at the top, expenses at the bottom, and the net income, expenses deducted from the income to determine your net income for the month, for the year. So we will determine your income based on that. Sometimes people with Uber just copy all of the weekly pay. That's not going to get your application reviewed. You need to break out your expenses because there are business expenses as a rule for every self-employed person. Not always, but as a rule. So you need to provide that. You also need to provide the last 3 months of business and checking savings account statements. Okay, federal income tax returns. I've already talked about it, 21, 22, 23, 24, 21, 22, 23, if you have not filed your 2024 tax returns, and 22, 23, and 24, if you have. Now, you need to provide every page that was submitted to the IRS. When we look at your tax return, we know what your adjusted gross income is, so we're going to look at all the W-2s that better add up to what your adjusted income is. If it's not, that means you're missing a W-2, your application's incomplete. We're going to know if you have earned interest and dividends on your accounts. There's going to be a page in your tax return that lists the accounts the interest and dividends were paid out of. You need to provide, make sure that page is provided. If it's not, we have no idea. We don't know if we have all your bank statements. So we're going to, if it's there, we're going to look, and we should have every statement for those accounts that are listed, maybe more, but that are listed in the bank in the interest and dividends. We're going to know if you're getting distributions from your retirement, Social Security, Roth IRA, traditional IRA, if you're self-employed, if you own a home. We're going to know all that from your tax return. So we do look at them closely, okay? So just remember to provide every page that was submitted to the IRS. We do not want your state tax returns. If you provide your state tax returns, they are automatically shredded. We don't keep them. We shred them. Now, if you have not filed tax returns in any of the years, you need to provide a letter from the IRS that verifies that you did not file. And you can do that two ways. You can submit Form 4506-T from the IRS. You can get a copy of the form at irs.gov. You can fill it out and send it into the IRS. It'll take 2 weeks minimum to get that letter. Or you can create an account on the irs.gov, you know, username and password, everything we have to do for everything else in life. And then you can print out the verification of non-filing for the tax years that it's needed. Once your account is set up, it takes like 5 minutes. It's the easiest way to do it. So those are the two options you can get to provide proof that you did not file. Now, you may have filed your tax return, but you can't find it, or you don't have you didn't keep a copy of it. So in that case, you need to go, you need to provide a transcript, a tax transcript from the IRS. Same way, using Form 4506-T, or create an account at irs.gov and print out a tax transcript. It won't cost you anything. If you ask to print out a copy of your tax return that you actually submitted. There is a cost for that, so we don't require that, but we will require a tax transcript. They have other transcripts you can get, account transcript. That is not your tax transcript. So if you send an account transcript, it's not what we're asking for, and your application is incomplete. Now, we also need the copy of your W-2s for 21, 22, 23, and 24. Again, you can get a wage and tax transcript if you can't find your W-2s and or 1099. You do that the same by using Form 4506-T or create an account and print out the wage and tax transcript for the corresponding tax years that you need it, okay? You can do that right at the IRS.gov. It's much faster. All right. Any questions on taxes? No. Okay. Bank accounts. Again, what I said earlier, all asset statements must include your name, account number, institution name for all checking, savings, investment, retirement accounts. Any accounts provided without this information, incomplete. So checking account. Pay attention. This is where people screw up all the time. You need to provide your last 3 months of bank statements. We need the actual bank statement front and back. If you don't get your bank statements mailed to you every month, you go online to your bank, username, password, print out the e-statements, okay? The last 3 months of e-statements. If you're not computer literate, you go to the bank and you tell them, I need the last 3 months bank statements, the actual statements. They will print it out for you. They may charge you per page, which I think is criminal, but that's just me. But they will print out the statements for you. But you want to make sure they give you a statement and not a running 3 months transcript. Because again, the running 3 months transcript is not accepted. You provide it and we're not reviewing your application for eligibility. Now, we look at those checking accounts, particularly the deposits, with a fine tooth comb, okay? So we're gonna see your payroll, Social Security, tax refund this time of year, DOR, whatever. We know that where that money came from, okay? I've already mentioned Social Security, we need the benefit letter, all right? If it's a tax refund, obviously it's a tax refund, so we have your tax return so we can ask the tax refund. But if you're getting distribution from Fidelity, we know you need to provide the Fidelity statement. So we're going to see that. We're going to expect to see that as part of the Fidelity statement. But also, if you're getting a monthly amount to supplement your income, we need the letter of how much and what, if any, taxes are being taken out of. If there are deposits, ATM deposits, mobile deposits, cash deposits, Venmo deposits, Cash App deposits, Poshmark, you need to explain where every one of those deposits came from, all right? Venmo, Cash App, people are being paid via Venmo now. They're being paid through their Cash App. So if we see a funky number, you know, $129.57, it's an odd number. That could be someone's part-time job. So you need to identify where that money's coming from. You can write it directly on the bank statement if you want, or you can take your time and type up a separate sheet. Doesn't matter. As long as it's legible to us, we will accept it handwritten on the bank statement. The issue is, if you don't explain the bank statements, you don't explain those deposits, we cannot identify. We're going to average them out over 3 months, and we're going to get and multiply by 12. That absolutely can put you over income, and that is not an appeal that you're going to win, because you didn't, because it's very clear in the application, you need to identify those deposits. So if we deny you based on that, you're not going to win the appeal at all, okay? So you need to make sure you explain it. If you have Cash App, if you have PayPal, if you have Venmo, you also need to provide the last 3 months statements for those accounts, okay? And sometimes those will, people who transfer the money will say reimbursement for lunch, reimbursement for dinner, birthday gift, whatever it may be. But you need to provide those corresponding statements. If you have Venmo, Cash App, whatever you have, I can't list them all because the list gets longer every day. I swear to God, there's more online things. So the important thing for you to remember when it comes to your deposits, we need to know where every penny comes from. Okay. Again, we can identify direct deposits. We can identify Social Security. We can identify child support if it's coming from the DOR. So we can identify a lot of it. Those we can't, ATM deposits, cash deposits, whatever it is, Venmo, Cash App, PayPal, you need to explain it. And if you don't explain it, we're counting it as income. And it very well may put you over the income limit and you're no longer eligible to purchase an affordable unit, okay? We also look at your savings account the exact same way. So you need to identify any non-transfer deposits in your savings account. Now back to the checking. You may have a bank account. You may be transferring funds between your account, your savings, and your checking. That's okay. We can match up the account numbers in the account. So if you're transferring money to the savings and account 1234 going into 4567, we'll match those accounts so you're all set. But if you have money being transferred into another account, you didn't provide us that account. You didn't tell us anything about that account. Then your application is incomplete, okay? So you've got to look at your bank statements. You've got to make sure every transfer coming in, we know where that money's coming from. We will match bank statements from all the bank statements you provide us. We will match account numbers. If it's not your account number, then you need to explain it, okay? And failure to do that, again, this is where most people are determined ineligible because they didn't take the time, they didn't read the application, they don't explain where the money comes from. It's counted as income, and I guarantee you, for some of you, it will put you over the income limit and you are not eligible for a unit. I'm just missing something. What am I missing? Oh, I can see it in my, it's right here in my head. What am I missing? It'll come to me. So you need to provide the last 3 months of bank, all checking savings accounts, Venmo, PayPal, Cash App, whatever they are, the last 3 months. If you have a prepaid debit card, this is not the ATM card that is attached to your checking account, but if you have a prepaid debit card, some people get Social Security on a Direct Express card. Some people get child support on some other kind of card. You may get paid through a Visa prepaid card. Company may deposit the money. We need the last statement of those accounts. We don't need the last three. We just need the last statement. And we're only looking, if there's a balance on that account, then that's part of your asset. But really, we're only looking to make sure that's where your payroll is being deposited. And that's the only thing that's being deposited on that account. Okay? So if there's other money going into that account, you need to explain it. So to prepaid debit cards, checking, oh, I know what it is. Checking accounts, I don't care how I don't care how you spend your money. So I don't look at that as closely, but we will scan through your transactions to see Robinhood going into Fidelity account. If you're transferring money into another bank account regularly that we don't have an account for. So we look at those kinds of things. You know, how many times you stop at Starbucks per month. I don't care. I don't look at it. But we will look for transactions being transferred out of your account into something else. So just keep that in mind as we look through it. You look through it. So Robinhood, bank statements, we're going to match them up. And if anything's missing, there's a problem. Okay, if you have a revocable trust, you need to provide a copy of the revocable trust. The value of the trust counts towards your asset limit. Investment accounts, stocks, bonds, treasuries, CDs, mutual funds, money market, Robinhood, any other online accounts, you only need to provide your last statement on, not the last three. Retirement, IRAs, Roth, 401k, 403b, KEO, pensions, etc. Again, we only need the last statement. Keeping in mind, back to your W-2s, we can tell on the W-2 if you have a retirement account from any of your jobs from the last 3 or 4 years. Okay? So if you have a 401k that's been rolled over into an IRA, you're going to be providing us your rollover IRA. If your account is still with that company and you didn't provide us the statement, it's an incomplete application, okay? So you need to provide the last statements for every retirement, 401k, 403b, pension, whatever. You need to provide the last statement only. And again, going back to assets, for those accounts you're no longer working for that you may have a retirement account with of any sort, we will count it towards your asset limit, but we will deduct taxes and penalties if they apply before we come to the final dollar amount. Certainly in a traditional IRA, if you're under 59 and a half, you're going to pay a 10% penalty if you withdraw, plus federal income tax, plus state income tax. That's all going to be deducted before we come to the final amount that is going to be added to your asset. Okay? But remember, we need it from all current and past jobs. If you have a whole life or universal life insurance policy, there's a cash value to those accounts. The cash value counts towards your asset limit. This is not the insurance you may have through your job. You have life insurance through your job. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about policies that you pay a monthly premium on every month. That is either whole life or universal life insurance. There is a cash value. If it's term life insurance, there's no cash value. You do not need to provide a statement of that account. Again, unborn child. Oh, wait a minute. The lump sum receipts are one-time receipts. You gamble. You got, you know, gambling receipt you received. I just had someone apply for something. You know, he got back pay from Social Security, or if your ex pays the back child support in a lump sum, that's not counted as income. That is counted as an asset. So you need to provide that documentation as well. For students, I'm going really fast because it's almost 9 o'clock, and I thank you for your time. Students, if you have a student that's in college, if they are a full-time student and a dependent on their tax returns, we are only going to count $480 of their income in determining your household income. If they are a part-time student, whether they are dependent or not, or a full-time student and they are not a dependent on your tax return, then the full income they earn is going to count towards your income limit in determining your household eligibility. Okay, so again, full-time students and they're dependent on your tax return, we are only counting $480 of their income. If they are a full-time student but not a dependent on your tax return, or they are a part-time student, no matter if they're on your account or not, we're going to count their full income in determining your household income eligibility. If they are a student, then they need to provide proof that they are a full-time college student, and that usually sends a transcript, something that's going to show that they're a full-time student, and which college they go to. All right, so you need to provide that documentation. If, again, pregnant, unborn child, household member must provide proof. Again, we've talked about it, divorce, separation. You need to be far enough along in the process that you can provide documentation on the separation of, or the distribution, the separation of family assets. If you're getting child support, if you're getting alimony, that's going to be in your divorce papers. So if you're far enough along, you need to send that documentation to us. If you're not that far along and you don't have that information, then you're too soon to apply for an affordable unit on your own. Your soon-to-be exes, income, assets, home buyer status will be taken under consideration in determining household eligibility, even if they're not going to be living in the unit, okay? If you're receiving a gift for a down payment, whoever's giving you a gift needs to provide a letter. We are giving Maureen O'Hagan, you know, $50,000 as down, a gift, must say gift, for a down payment. The money does not need to be in your account. We understand it's a gift only if you're buying, so that's okay. They need to provide a copy of their account that the money's coming from to prove that they actually have those funds. They can, unlike your account, you can't cross off your account numbers or your name or anything in the account. Whoever's giving you a gift can cross out their account number, can cross out the, not the ending balance, but can cross out all the transactions going in and out of the account. We just need, and their name, that's obviously they need their name. We just need to make sure they actually have that money. Okay, so whatever's going in and out of their account, none of our business. So we really only need to see the ending balance on that statement, but the last statement with the ending balance to prove they have the down payment funds to give you as a gift. If you have your deposit is in cash at home, you need to deposit that money into a checking account. We're not going to take your word for it that you have $10,000 in a mattress at home. That needs to be deposited in a bank account. So you need to do that before you apply because you need to get the current last bank statement. Okay? So remember that. That's it. I have questions. Hang on. Find the last one here. Okay. So if you deliver it to the office, you would hand it to us. We are here from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Someone's always in the office, so you can certainly stop by our office and drop it off. The application, the address is on the last page of the application. If someone missed to include a bank account that they have but don't use it and therefore forgot to include it, how would guys determine that person ineligible? All that question is telling me is you're going to deliberately withhold a bank statement because it puts you over the asset limit. That's what's telling me. But to answer your question, assuming you're being honest, if there's any money going in and out, if you have an account from your pay stub, that account is in your pay stub, we're going to look for it. But if it doesn't put you over the asset limit, just provide it. I'm not going to tell you how to sidestep the eligibility criteria, which is the impression I get by that question. We do have a Dropbox at the office, but it's outside and it's unprotected. So we don't recommend anyone drop it off in the Dropbox, which is part of our mailboxes out front, because it's not locked. So if you get here before our office is open, on the floor at the top of the stairs outside our office, there's a metal box. You can drop it in there, and we'll get it when we get to the office. But please don't put it in the Dropbox outside, because if you come here and drop it off on Saturday, no one's picking it up until Monday. There has never been a problem with people going into the mail outside our office, but I don't want yours to be the first one that disappears. So we ask that you do not use that Dropbox, which is outside our office. We do not need the state returns. All taxes, needs pages, yes. What does it say? It feels like too much paper. Well, I don't need the worksheets. A lot of it, when they print out, they give you the tax worksheets. I don't need the worksheets. Those aren't submitted to the IRS. If H&R Block does your taxes, I swear to God, they kill a tree for each tax return they do. I mean, people have submitted all those pages, and maybe we need 6 or 10 out of 100 pages that we receive, and we're shredding the rest of it. So we only need the pages you are submitting to the IRS. We don't need the worksheets. We don't need all the explanation pages that H&R Block and maybe TurboTax provide you. So it shouldn't be that many pages if you just submit the pages that are submitted to the IRS. If you have an account that you don't use on a regular basis and it's not closed, the value of that account is part of your asset, so you would need to provide the last 3 statements. So I think that answers the question. It wasn't. Do you know what number, I have no, if you're asking me, do I know what number of the pages for the tax pages to be provided? I don't. I have no idea. Everyone's taxes are different, but they always start with a 1040. 1040 is 2 pages, 1040, 1040, and then all the schedules and attachments that go to the IRS are behind the 1040. So I don't know where it starts, but it starts with the 1040. I hope that helps. I don't know. I haven't done my taxes this year, so I don't know how it's going to look. What about joint accounts with adult children? Yes, you need to provide those accounts. If your name is on the top, it's your account. Typically, if your name is on the bottom, it's, if the person the account is under passes away, then it just goes, you have access to their account. I understand that. But, yes, you do need to provide those accounts, and you can provide an explanation about those accounts as well. If I have an account that only does... Okay, quarterly statements, good question. See, we're in March, January, February, March. So if you get quarterly statements, for example, in your 401k, then you're going to be providing the December statement because the March, unless you provide... The March statement isn't available yet. Excuse me. The March statement isn't available yet because March isn't over. So if you have quarterly statements, then you need to provide the last quarterly, which is December, and that's absolutely fine. Some savings accounts are quarterly because, particularly if you don't have any, if you didn't deposit any money or take any money out and there's been no movement on the account, they tend not to provide your account then. So you just need to let us know. But I understand the quarterly statements. You'll need to provide the last quarter. I have a full-time job and I work sometimes as an Uber driver. You're self-employed as an Uber driver, so everything about self-employment would apply to you. You need to provide a spreadsheet for the last 12 months and it will be counted as income. Yes, you need to provide a detailed expenses for the Uber too. Yep, because you are self-employed. Okay, that's all the questions. Anything else? Then I'm going to say goodnight because I'm hungry and I'm talked out. So I will, this should be posted tomorrow. Because it's been so long, 2.5 hour meeting, I may have issue getting it to my computer guy to get it posted, so it may take a little longer while I figure it out. I'm not that computer literate. But I do thank you all for giving me your time tonight. I sincerely hope I helped you in providing complete application. Again, we are here to assist you. There's myself, there's Laura, there's Jennifer. Any one of us can answer your questions. If they have a question, they'll come to me. So there is someone here to answer questions for you. So please take advantage of that for any properties you're applying for MCO. We're not here to answer questions if you're applying for a property project that MCO is not involved with. People have done that, and we won't answer those questions. So other than that, again, thank you all. It was a long meeting, but I do think it was productive. Call or email with additional questions, and we are here to help. So on that note, I'm going to say good night, and I'll look forward to reviewing all your applications. Thank you.